Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Robert Holly with Home Healthcare News. Before we jump into my conversation with Centennial Adult Care Center CEO William Zagurski, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Homecare Homebase, whose powerful cloud-based home health software streamlines virtually every aspect of your business. Spend less time on paperwork and more time delivering quality care to the patients who need you. Visit hchb.com to learn more. For many, the adult day center world isn't exactly crystal clear. Murky federal definitions and regulations mean the space is largely left to state-by-state governance, and antiquated notions of what adult day offers paint a rather dull picture. But don't be fooled, the adult day center market is booming, and perhaps nobody knows that better than Centennial Adult Care Center CEO William "Bill" Zagurski. If you don't believe me, just listen to this. A decade ago, there were a few hundred adult day providers out there. In 2019, that number's now closer to 10,000, though even the biggest still only have about 1% market share. It's a similar trend to what we've seen in the home health and home care industries. I recently caught up with Bill to learn all about his business, its challenges, opportunities, and what the future holds. During the conversation, Bill and I also talked about the importance of wraparound services to the adult day model. It's an idea that leaves ample room for home health and home care partnerships, he says. Joining me now on the line from Nashville, Tennessee is Bill Zagurski. Bill's the CEO of American Senior Care Centers, Inc. and the executive director of Centennial Adult Care Center. Bill, welcome to Disrupt.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Now, before we jump into the meat of the conversation, I just wanted to give you and all of our listeners a heads up that I've been dealing with a bit of a summer cold. So if you're wondering who's that guy on Disrupt this time, it's still me. You're just going to have to suffer through my scratchy voice. And Bill, that means we'll just try to leave most of the talking to you.
Sounds great. Thanks, Bob.
All right. Well, I provided some high-level details of your company right off the bat. But let's take a deeper dive. Tell me a little bit about your company, where it operates, what services you provide, basically American Senior Care Centers in a nutshell.
Sure, absolutely. So yeah, as you said, American Senior Care Center is our corporate name. We operate as Centennial Adult Care Centers in general in Middle Tennessee. We have three medical model adult day healthcare facilities in the Middle Tennessee area. And we also operate non-medical in-home services and transportation services in the Middle Tennessee area, all of which are under our DBA, Centennial Adult Care Center's name. So, but that medical model adult day is our primary focus of our company, and we serve individuals 18 and over of all ages and acuity ranges, all diagnoses, all physical and cognitive conditions too. So there's very few individuals who we have not been able to help over the years. So we're really the largest comprehensive medical model adult day healthcare facility in Tennessee as well.
It's not often that we've had adult day providers on Disrupt. I think you're actually the first, so congratulations on that.
Happy to be the first. Yeah, it's adult day healthcare is certainly adult day and services and adult day healthcare in general are certainly a lesser known part of the continuum of care. So I'm happy to talk more about it.
How'd you first get into the space? What's your background and what's that journey been like getting into the CEO role?
Yeah, sure. It's a long and varied story that takes lots of meandering paths. But long story short, the personal background for me and for our company, my parents actually started our company back in 1991. My father had been with HCA for a number of years before leaving HCA, and we started with a need in the community of a medical model adult day healthcare. And one of the main inspiring factors was actually a grandmother that had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's and then moved from Chicago to Nashville to live with us. She had attended a social model adult day program here in Nashville for a number of years, but as soon as she became a higher acuity where she could no longer attend the social programs, there was really nowhere else for her to go. So we started in 1991 as the first medical model adult day healthcare provider in Tennessee, and we really were the ones that were able to assist with individuals with dementia, progressing to the point of wandering incontinence and other issues too. So that's really the genesis of our company. I was younger when that company opened, and really did not plan on staying in Tennessee, as no young individual really does. So my personal history was mired in scientific research. Actually, I spent a number of years in cancer research, and then in molecular genetics as primary academic research through the late 90s and early 2000s. And to be perfectly honest, I got really tired of writing grants. I kind of changed phases and came back in 2011 with a small one-location adult day healthcare that we've been growing for about 20 years. And since then, I have expanded to increase our daily attendance, about double our attendance in our Nashville location. And I opened our second location in 2015. And then our third location in late 2017, 2018. Our in-home home care agency has been in process really for a number of years, although there's been some growth and retraction over some years, mostly because of the market saturation here in Middle Tennessee, though it's now growing again. And then recently, and I'm sure I'll talk more later about, we recently entered into the transportation agency organization too. So long and storied path to get into the CEO role, and just learning as I go to continue to expand into the adult healthcare space.
Sounds like a fascinating journey. And you mentioned in-home care, you mentioned transportation. I want to talk about those wraparound services and the synergy between home care and adult day a little bit later in this conversation. For now, I really want to take a deep dive into the adult day space. We talk all the time on HHCN about how the home care and home health industries are booming, you know, and more older adults are looking to age in place. What's going on in the adult day center space on a macro level? Does it have the same kind of boom? Kind of give me a state of the union synopsis, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. So it does kind of mirror the same growth trends that we're seeing in home health and non-medical and home care too, because again, the driving factor of individuals do want to remain living at home. So adult day has existed throughout the United States for decades, really kind of took off in the late 70s and 80s, mostly on the East Coast and the West Coast. And it's been a little bit slower to grow through the Midwest and even slower really through the South. But it continues to grow and you know, have a little bit of traction here and there, and I think that's really been ramping up over the last number of years. But in general, that growth trend has been continuing over the past, increasing over the past 5 years, and the fact that there's probably closer to 10,000 adult day centers in the United States as of 2019, which is really up almost 50% from 2014. So there's been a significant growth. And across the board, was one of the mitigating factors to inhibit growth is the fact that there's no federal model or federal definition of what adult day care is or adult day health care is. It's regulated differently from state to state. So some states are certainly more permissive for social model or medical model services. But in general, since every state is different, there's not large providers that are able to drive that growth at a macro level. What we've really seen recently in the past 5 to 7 years is an expansion in the for-profit adult day healthcare world. Most of that, I mentioned, from 5,000 to 10,000 growth, most of that growth has been in the for-profit industry and really continues to move forward. But as of 2016, slightly over 50% of the adult days throughout the United States are in the for-profit world as opposed to the non-profit world. And that's been a big switch over the past decade. So that's really, kind of continuing growth and expansion in the for-profit industry, as well as really the divergence of social model adult day services and medical model adult day healthcare. You'll probably hear me talk a lot with that differential terminology because, the social stigma of adult daycare is also a non-marketable trait that really suppresses growth and utilization. So there's been a real challenge to switch the nomenclature and use the common nomenclature of adult day services for social model adult daycare and use more of an adult day healthcare for a medical model adult day services throughout the United States.
I could kind of tell that you had a past career writing grants and as a researcher because you have all these great statistics ready. I had some of my own just so to give listeners a little bit more context. the total number of adult day centers in the U.S. increased more than 25% from 2002 to 2010. I was just trying to find a hard number in 2019, found that there was about 6,000, but you say that it's even more, probably closer to 10,000 or so. What are the major challenges or headwinds in the space? You mentioned a lack of a federal model. That seems like it could be difficult in terms of a stability or predictability standpoint.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, the differential regulation from state to state is significant, a significant factor in prohibiting growth. Because, again, if you just look at the state-to-state variation of regulation or licensure or certification, there's a dozen or so states throughout the United States that still have no type of licensure status for adult daycare of any sorts. Now, most of those do have some sort of certification requirements. But some of them do not. So there's still a few that are the quote-unquote wild, wild west of non-regulated, non-licensed states. And it's the lower reimbursed states or the Medicaid prohibitive states, usually in the Deep South, are some of those, or the ones that have been operating in, with a lower income and lower population in the North and elsewhere, too. So the differential regulation, as well as just the lack of common definition, are certainly prohibitive. And then across the United States, really access to care, since it is still the lesser known model, and since it varies from area to area and agency to agency, nobody really knows what adult day is for the most part, whether it be adult day services or adult day health care, or part of the continuum of care or separate from the continuum of care. There's a lot of confusion and just lack of knowledge of what adult day services are in general. So those are certainly some of the challenges, and the challenges really for growth continue to go on too, is most of the United States has urban centers and then more populations in the rural area, and individuals across urban and suburban and rural areas want to stay at home, and access to care is a very difficult problem, whether it be no access to transportation or no access to individual areas for adult day or a number of different factors. So those are challenges. Some of the other challenges, of course, are the policy variations and reimbursement models in different areas. The stigma, like I had mentioned, about what adult daycare is. No adult really sees themselves as needing assistance, and caregivers don't necessarily want to force a loved one into going out somewhere where they don't want to go. And the fear of institutionalization is certainly a mitigating factor as well. So the challenges abound. You had mentioned that continuing growth is really ramping up at this point in time. Some of those hard numbers, most of those come from the CDC, the National Study of Long-Term Care Providers. And there's the most recent published data is from 2016. They're currently in process for conducting the information and the data capture for the 2020 frame.
Bill, I'm just kind of wondering in my head right now, can this be a profitable space for operators? We touched on a couple of different really big challenges: marketing, just consumers' perceptions about what adult day is, also the lack of a federal reimbursement model. Is this a profitable space? What's your typical margin that an operator is maybe seeing, though I know maybe that's kind of difficult to pinpoint exactly?
Sure. Yeah, and it certainly can be a profitable space, and I think that's really we're really shown by the fact that the for-profit area has nearly doubled in the past 5 to 7 years too. But yeah,
right,
it absolutely can be a profitable space. It's hard to define the margins because the reimbursement models really differ so much, and there's a lot of providers that only operate in a Medicaid space. There's some providers that only operate in a private pay space. Some people utilize contract adult day health care, community adult day health care from the VA, and some are through a memorandum of understanding where they provide more of a social service, and both have differential reimbursement rates. So depending on the level of care provided really depends on the profitability of it, but it absolutely can be. And we've been a for-profit company for the better part of 30 years and have been profitable over time as well. And it varies, like I said, so much from state to state, but in the Medicaid permissive states of the Northwest, and California and Northeast, it absolutely can be a very profitable industry. Usually the Midwest and the South are slightly less profitable just because the Medicaid rates, although are higher, the acuity is usually generally higher, driving a higher level of care. But the fact is, your you're in a conglomerate setting where your staffing levels are slightly lower, so you're able to do things at a slightly lower expense rate. So hard to answer on the margins, you know, somewhere probably between 1% and 40%.
That's quite the range there. And I know you have, just due to all the roles and your position within the industry, you have some insight into other really great data points just to help our listeners paint a picture of the adult day industry. What other stats or figures are important to touch on?
Yeah, sure. And yeah, you mentioned, so I've been the chair of the research committee for the National Association of Adult Day Services for the past year and a half. And part of our role with NESDA has been to work with the CDC conducting the National Study of Long-Term Care Providers. So we have direct access and assistance with the counts of adult day centers. So and that's where some of those numbers I had mentioned before come from. The published numbers are currently from 2016. The 2018 data is in, you know, in review, and we're actually conducting the 2020 frame right now. So some of those numbers, we're really expecting that 2020 data, which again counts from 2019 to 20, to really probably show the 10,000 plus, if not, you know, there are some aggressive estimates that might be in excess of 12,000 adult day centers throughout the United States. And even then, it's difficult to assess, and those are verified centers. There's probably still a shadow market in excess of 10 or 20%, if not more than that, throughout the United States. So the expansion is continuing, and really I expect the for-profit industry to probably take up close to 60% of that market in the 2020 frame, where as of 2010, I think it was closer to about 40%, and in 2016 was really just over half. So you really see that expansion from the for-profit industry.
This is just a quick reminder to our listeners that we're speaking to Bill Zagorski, CEO of American Senior Care Centers, Inc., and Executive Director of Centennial Adult Care Center. Bill, so from my perspective, I see adult day providers as both friend and foe for home-based care agencies. Let's talk about both sides of that coin. First, what competitive advantages do adult day centers have over home health or home care agencies? You know, for example, we've talked to folks in the past about labor advantages or how one-to-one care has really maxed out just because there's not enough workers. So those services become a little bit more expensive for the consumers.
Sure, absolutely. And I think that's really probably, you know, it's a great question and great point. And, you know, whether you look at it as competitive advantages or not, I think it's an absolute essential for partnerships, you know, whether it be intercompany or intra-company, to really, you know, talk about more of those wraparound services later. You know, some of the easier, you know, targets that you could talk about with advantages is exactly as you mentioned, staffing ratios. With the competition for staffing and benefits and pay rates, although the pay rates have not increased from a federal level standpoint, being able to staff at a slightly lower level. I mean, one-on-one care is needed for home care. However, in an adult day setting, most states are in the 6-to-1 or 8-to-1 suggested or mandatory ratios, although most organizations run in the 4-to-1 to 6-to-1 ratios of staff to clients. So you're able to provide services between 4 and 6 clients at any given time for a staffing ratio. Also, the service availability, being able to provide services without interruption due to staffing issues. A center is going to be staffed with 3 to 6 employees at any given time. So if one of them is not able to provide services that day, the center is still able to be open and provide those services. Cost is certainly a competitive advantage. And the average cost of adult day in the United States is $72 a day. And that's usually between 6 and 10 hours of care. In Tennessee, most of the companies that we work with are open for 8 to 11 hours. Some of them are even open on weekends. So being able to provide services for 10 hours at $72 a day is certainly a competitive advantage over a $20 an hour average reimbursement for the home health market or non-medical in-home market. Medical oversight in the adult day healthcare industry is continuing to progress, and the fact that most centers have registered nurses on staff, usually full-time or part-time RNs or full-time and or full-time part-time LPNs, to provide ongoing medical oversight as well as medication assistance and management of vitals, et cetera. There has been a lot of beginning data capture to really show the advantages of adult day healthcare and the reduction of high-cost healthcare utilization. There's been some papers that have been published, and from a national standpoint, we've really been pushing out the measuring of true outcomes. In Tennessee, there's a there has been a project that's been ongoing for about a year and a half and still has another year and a half to for the true data, but showing a significant decrease in ER utilization, hospital readmission, both 30, 60, and 90-day injury-inducing falls across the board has been down with adult day healthcare use. The advantages of multiple different pay sources depending on the service model. There's comprehensive services that are truly interdisciplinary, as many organizations have. Master's level social workers, registered dietitians, RNs, LPNs, recreational therapists. Many programs bring in a pet therapist, music therapist, art therapist. So the ability to provide, you know, comprehensive therapeutic services in a conglomerate setting really does provide some advantages in a social, you know, social situation. Not to mention the social determinants of health, avoiding you know, geriatric depression and combating loneliness. So the list really does go on and on.
Yeah, that was going to be my follow-up question. You know, we hear so often these days about addressing the social determinants of health, and that's, you know, kind of a knock against some home care providers, is that you might have a caregiver going into that home for 6 or 7 hours a day, but a senior could be alone for the remainder of the day, or, you know, that relationship with the caregiver, that could vary. Could you delve a little bit further into that point and, you know, what you see in terms of engagement and social isolation in your own communities or centers?
Yeah, absolutely. And so that those social determinants of health are really kind of becoming a little bit more in vogue for not just providers of services and long-term care, but the payers as well. So, you know, that social setting, even with the medical oversight and the activity level, the social setting alone often is an answer to many, you know, many questions and many issues. Being able to avoid isolation, because in, you know, social isolation and loneliness lead to geriatric depression and lead to, you know, a myriad of additional issues that I don't have the stats to quote in front of me, but geriatric depression alone is one of the leading causes of other factors in mitigating of death and high cost healthcare. So being able to promote socialization, promote interaction, promote the sense of worth among peers has really been one of the driving factors of the expansion of the adult day world. People are with other individuals that they see as similar. They're able to interact. They're able to have a sense of purpose. Many centers are able to provide services for individuals with, you know, physical disabilities or cognitive disabilities, but still want to be able to volunteer in the community or work in the community. And the adult day center actually provides a relief and an outlet for that aspect too, because they might believe they're coming to school or to work as an employee or as a volunteer, although they might be a paid provider. So the, you know, the aspect of combating loneliness and isolation in a conglomerate setting with the medical oversight combines to really kind of hit a home run for adult day healthcare.
So let's talk about the flip side now. Why is it important for adult day centers and home-based care providers to work together at this point in time? And this is going back to that concept of wraparound services.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's a great question, because adult day healthcare is great, but it can't do it all. And centers can't be open all the time. They can't do everything. They can't do anything outside their four walls. So it is absolutely essential for individual providers or larger companies to be able to associate with home-based care providers and wraparound services to include, you know, transportation. Very few adult day providers are in-home personal care or, you know, non-medical in-home providers, or the ones that are have the advantage of being able to provide services in the mornings or in the afternoons and on the weekends. Caregivers don't always work just from 8 to 4. Services don't just need it from 7 to 5. Also, in a lot of communities, Medicaid reimbursement rates are really only for 4 to 6 hours per day. So some of those adult day centers are only open 6 or so hours. So it's essential for the assistants in home or the transportation assistants to really be intertwined to provide a true system of care for an individual, to allow the caregiver to continue to work and engage in the community, and allow the individual receiving services to remain at home and part of the community as well. The wraparound services is really going to be the answer. Even if you take all of the in-home services, transportation services, adult day healthcare, and anything else, you put it all together, it's still less expensive than most assisted living or skilled nursing facilities. And the payers are certainly starting to see that as well. There's a lot of wraparound services that are coming out from the Medicaid system, as well as, you know, from a Medicare Advantage standpoint and other, you know, other payers as well.
And are you currently contracting with any outside home care providers? It sounds like you do it in-house.
Right. We personally do. We've been a non-medical in-home provider for the better part of 20 years, actually. However, you know, I also, you know, really work very closely with a number of providers throughout the Middle Tennessee area. Because again, the staffing is certainly a challenge, and that's not just in Middle Tennessee, but that's across the United States. Staffing is an absolute challenge, and being able to have relationships with other providers is essential to be able to provide services for individuals, because if we're not able to provide it in a manner that I believe is competent, that I immediately want to refer it to an individual that I know will.
And I know you warned me when we were setting up this conversation that you're not the expert on PACE. I'm definitely not the expert on PACE, but could just, you know, briefly, I think it's important to touch on, could you just outline how that fits in this conversation and kind of walk our listeners through what PACE is? I know that there were some recent updates with that, but yeah, just the one-on-one, or the PACE 101, if you will.
Sure. Yeah. And there's certainly a lot more information available online and a lot more individuals that are significantly more knowledgeable than me. But yeah, the PACE, or the program for all inclusive care for the elderly, is a program through Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and traditionally really do encompass much of the wraparounds and are all inclusive care for the elderly services. You know, some of those services generally include adult day services and dentistry, home care, hospital care, meals, nursing facilities, OT, PT, speech therapy, social work, transportation. So it's truly a comprehensive program. And there's usually reimbursement from CMS, both from the Medicare side as well as from the Medicaid side. Traditionally, the PACE programs have been in the nonprofit space for as long as I've known about it. However, as you mentioned, there's been a big change in the fact that there's been some small, I believe they're pilot programs, although they may have been made permanent, for the for-profit industry to enter the PACE area. It's a very capital intensive to open some of these PACE programs, but the programs have generally been very beneficial to those that they're able to provide care for, because you're able to reduce the overall cost burden since you're including all the care across the multiple different platforms.
All right, shifting gears completely now, what's the M&A and investment landscape like in the adult day space? Home care and hospice are both hot in terms of mergers and acquisitions and pretty robust multiples, hospice especially. Home health, of course, there's always M&A going on there too, but PDGM is kind of throwing a wrench into things. What's going on with adult day?
Yeah, and I think there's significant interest and really increasing interest, you know, from an M&A standpoint in adult day. Some of the real challenges are some of the things that I already talked about. I mean, the largest provider of adult day services has about 112 locations throughout the United States, and so that's less than 1% of the market share. So that's the real inhibitory factor for a large, you know, M&A standpoint, is how to find the value in individual providers or multiple providers be able to wrap up in type of a large investment opportunity. But there's a lot of interest from from a private standpoint for PE, as well as from a merger position too, because it's right. The industry is certainly ripe for consolidation. Some areas are certainly more active than others, and a lot of that kind of follows the Medicaid permissive states versus some of the Medicaid indecisive states, if you will. In Tennessee, there's some issues with the block grant proposal, which is not unique to Tennessee. However, that really could certainly be a benefit to adult day and in-home providers, being some of the lower cost utilization for individuals on those programs. So the M&A, the landscape is growing and increasing, but I know it's also a challenge from an investment standpoint to find the value in it. From what little I have been speaking to some other providers and some other interested individuals, the multiples are still very high, and this really presents another challenge for individuals to be able to find the value. Many adult day centers throughout the United States are still in the first round of ownership and are privately owned, family owned. So many of them are aging and are looking for exits. However, have the pride of ownership demanding a multiple that's much higher than would ever be deserved too. So there's challenges, but I do believe in the next 5 to 10 years, there'll probably be significant changes in that M&A that really continue to ramp up, because the consolidation is so readily available.
I know in the home care industry too, if it's an agency under, you know, first generation ownership. It's really not the kids that end up like selling to a private equity firm. It's usually that next generation. So, well, I think that checks off all the big questions that I had. What's next for you and your company in terms of future plans and growth? Any plans to move outside of Tennessee?
Yes, there's certainly there's a lot of question marks. There's lots of plans. We've grown slowly over time and have opened two additional centers in the last 4 years, and really do plan to continue when opportunities present themselves. We've recently launched, or begin, are actually in process of launching a transportation agency that will allow us to continue to provide some services throughout the Middle Tennessee and actually statewide area as a transportation agency, in addition to our continued expansion for the adult day and the non-medical in-home market. I've had the pleasure of working as the president of the Tennessee Association of Adult Day Services, as well as working with the National Adult Day Services Association, where we have pretty significant policy efforts. So from a local level, really expanding the definition and licensure status of multiple levels of care in Tennessee. And from a national standpoint, being able to work with a lot of wonderful providers throughout the United States. And we have some lobbyists that are working on some policy issues out of Washington as well, too. So that will certainly be taking quite a bit of my time. But in Tennessee, there's room for expansion. There's room for growth. There's only about 40 providers throughout the entire state, and there's certainly room for about double that. But it's access to the rural markets. It's really a microcosm of the United States, too, where there might be 10,000 locations throughout the United States, but really probably space for 3 to 4 times that. But it's the undercapitalized individuals are not able to expand the rural markets as easily as some of the larger ones, and then whether the appetite is there or not. So continued growth and expansion, there's certainly a possibility for M&A activity outside of the state. Tennessee is a bit unique and is certainly I wouldn't say it's unique, but it is certainly different than all the states that surround it. Every state is different, so it presents a challenge for multi-state roll-ups as well, too. But anything is possible.
Well, that seems like a good place to wrap this episode of Disrupt Up. Bill, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks, Bob. It's really been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Robert Holly, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.